Hello, everyone. Welcome to Black and Gold Weekly, presented by BetSafe Colorado. I'm going to head up to Boulder right away. We're going to get this thing kicked off. We'll talk a little bit about Arizona State and the Colorado Buffaloes. But when we talk about, and I've had this conversation in recent past about the Mount Rushmore of CU football, it starts with this guy right here. And I'm talking about none other than Darian Hagan. Hagues, thanks for joining us, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, brother. I appreciate it.
It's good to see you, bro, and so much to talk about. I'm going to start it off. Listen, you're the third CU quarterback I've had on the show. Started with Cordell, and then Joel Klatt joined. Now I got Darian Hagan. I have so many questions to ask you. We're going to have a little fun on the show because you not only are you, and this is, I think this is pretty much consensus, not only are you the sort of historian, the resident expert on all things CU football, in part because of your tenure there in the athletic department and on campus, the greatest quarterback to ever play at CU, I think that might be putting it lightly. There's a case to be made, Hagues, about you being the greatest football player ever at Colorado. I believe the best option quarterback to ever play in college football. I've had that debate with a few people. A lot of folks agree. But I want to start with where this program is today compared to, I'm going to take you back to 1988. When you were there when, you know, the renaissance of CU football. In fact, you were instrumental in that renaissance. Right. Do you see, sort of comparisons between what's happening now and what was happening then?
Yes, I do. What was happening when we played was, we had the same message was getting spoke about with Coach Mack. He was talking about, rowing in the same direction, having each other's back, playing for the brother next to you. Same thing Coach Prime is saying and what he's preaching to the guys now. The difference is now all the celebrities on the sideline, you got people not affiliated with CU football that just want to be a part of the scene, a part of the action that we didn't have that back then. I talked to people today at Buff Bales. I said the only difference was back then and now is the celebrities. And what we had one celebrity. His name was Pastor J. And he was the guy that was, after every kickoff, he was chasing the tee. That was the only
thing. Hey, man. Remember, it didn't matter whether or not we were receiving or we were defending on the kickoff, you and I would be like, uh-oh, Pastor. It didn't matter who we were playing, Watching Pastor J sprint out on the field and sprint back, man, we were just dying laughing on the field.
First of all, you very seldom do you see somebody sprinting with cowboy boots on. He's sprinting across the field with the cowboy boots, man, and long hair flying all over the place. And he was
going all out too, man.
Going all out, super, super, super unathletic. it was awesome to see that.
it's interesting too. You mentioned the celebrities, which is, a phenomenon that Coach Prime, I think, brings to it. Obviously, social media amplifies it tenfold. That has, it's interesting for an old head like myself, and I would imagine like you to some degree, that takes some getting used to. It's not something that necessarily comes natural to us.
Right. Absolutely. You have to want to be around it a lot, and you have to have been around it to understand it. And, I'm here and I see it all, and to have cameras everywhere and, everything you say, everything you do is being photographed or is being recorded and then is being publicized. That's something that it takes a while to get used to.
Yeah. Yeah. Hagues, let's talk a little bit about the current team, 27-24. I think the final score at Arizona State. I think you were out there at the game this past week. If 4-2 right now, two games away from being eligible for a bowl game, if you look at this team, I'm a bit surprised pleasantly that, six games in, the record is, in fact, 4-2. What is the upside for this team? What do you see? And has it surprised you to some degree how fast it's come around?
Yeah, it has surprised me. I didn't think that you could turn around a program like he's done so fast. But at the same time, he went out and he knew who he wanted to target. He knew what to say to get them guys to buy in. And they all bought in, and the program is changed the trajectory at a faster pace than I thought that it could have been changed. But he's a marketing genius. He's a phenomenal coach, I think. He gets in his kids' heads, and he gets them to buy in and rowing in the same direction. It's the same thing with Coach McCartney.
Yeah.
He taught us, how to be, for boys to men, and he taught us to understand and respect each other. Yeah, you plan for each other, and just to be a part of it and sit back and watch it and not have to be a part of it and coach it and be one of those guys that are not panicked, but my life right now, man, I'm calm, cool, and collected. And I hadn't had that in my life in a long time as a coach. And now, just like I said, to sit back and experience it, but experience it from afar, even though I'm close, is awesome.
That's great. And you mentioned, you evoked the name Bill McCartney. And in my conversations with people, I'm always drawing the parallels between the two. I mean, you're a lot closer to it today, being in the building than I am, but I do see some parallels there. One, their outward expression of their faith, right? Unapologetic in it. Right. But two, their ability to communicate with this generation of young men and this generation of families, not just the young men, but their families.
Right.
I remember a story you've told about Bill McCartney coming to visit you in your home in L.A. in Watts. And I mean, that takes a special, before we even go there, recall that story, Hank, because I think it's one of the classic recruiting stories ever.
Well, Coach Mack, he had, him and Coach Barnett, were coming to my house for an official visit, when they can first opportunity, they can come and speak to their parents and speak to you and the people that you love and you respect. And they called me from a phone booth. That's how old this was.
Damn, how old are you?
27. But they called from a phone booth, and Coach Barnett calls, and he's like, "Hey, we're here. What's your address and things like that." And then you hear gunshots in the background, and then all you hear is Coach Mack telling Coach. He said, "Gary, we gotta go. Get up." So Coach Barnett obviously dove on the ground when bullets were coming flying around him. And so me and my uncle, we drove down the street and we escorted him back to our house. And we get to the house and Coach Mack is asking me and my mom, my aunt, he goes, "So what are you guys thinking? Where do you want Darian to go?" And my mom and my aunt, they say, Darian was raised a Sooner. And but he doesn't want to go to Oklahoma. I would say that Nebraska's in the lead. And he goes, "Nebraska? Why would Nebraska be in the lead?" And then he asked me the same question. Why would Nebraska be in the lead? I'm like, "Coach, they play for national championships. They're on TV all the time." I said, "I want to be a part of that." And he was like, "Mom," he said, "he can't go to school there. What neighborhood is this?" And is it a Crip neighborhood or a Blood neighborhood? My mom goes, "A Crip neighborhood." He goes, "He can't go to Nebraska. He comes home with that red on, they're gonna kill him." So I looked at my mom, we looked at each other, we're like, "Oh, we didn't even think of that." That had no part of the equation was that even thought about. And after that, I was like, "Hey, Coach."
Classic Mac.
I want to be at the University of Colorado. But he knew the right buttons to push, what the right thing to say, at the right time.
Yeah,
he was dead on, and it was something that we never even thought about as a family.
Yeah, that authenticity, and we laugh about the crack around about the Crips and Bloods, but the reality is, he instills so much or elicits so much trust, particularly from parents, and I'll even go as far as to say, from Black parents, from women, mothers, our mothers, because one of his strong faith. But, you know, moms have a different kind of instinct about people. If you can convince her, then there's something real there. And I get the sense that all these years later, Coach Prime, similar in his approach.
Right, right. Absolutely. You know, people gravitate toward him. People want to just be able to touch him. You know, I tease people when they're asking me, what do I think of him? And first thing I say is Black Jesus. You know, everybody want to be around him. People, anything he says is gospel. You know, everything he touched turned to gold. You know, and it's just it's a sight to see, man. It's a sight to see.
I tell you what, it is. It's an amazing story, and it's just starting to unfold. All right, Higgs, we're going to talk a little bit more about CU football, but I want to get to this quarterback thing, man. You have no idea how many conversations I find myself engaged in from time to time about, you know, I think most people would say, yep, Darian Higgins, best quarterback ever played. Colorado history, yeah. And then there's those few who, some of the younger people, they tend to forget. They weren't around necessarily when you were doing your thing. And Cordell's name come up a lot. And so when he was on the show, I'm like, hey, man, I've welcomed him in as, hey, listen, we have a very special guest, the second best quarterback, arguably, to ever play at Colorado. He had the audacity to then stop me and say, well, wait a minute, who was the best? I'm like, come on, man. You know,
right.
Then I have Joel Klatt on, and, you know, Joel comes on and introduce him in the way in which I do. And his, you know, he wants to make the distinction. Well, yeah, you know, option quarterback, you know. And so they try. And everyone's trying to take a little bit of the shine from the GOAT, to which your response to them, Higgs, would be what? This is your moment to shoot back.
What I would say is, how many rings did Cordell have? You know,
I'll ask him next time I have him on.
How many rings does Joe Klatt have? Okay, and then every day I walk down the Legacy Hall. Okay, I can count on my hand alone that 7 gold bricks.
Okay? How many?
7.
And what does the bricks represent? What do they represent?
They represent times that the University of Colorado played top 25 teams and were victorious. Okay. Never lost to Nebraska. Okay. Never lost to Colorado State. Okay. And sure enough, never got concussed. Okay. So I can tell you, I was one of the toughest. Okay. And at the end of the day, you know, it's really not about who was the best, who was first, you know, second, who was third. Okay. At the end of the day, I just know that I earned the respect of my teammates. I earned the respect of people around me. And I played a game of football to give back to people and let them understand that, hey, I've come a long way from the mean streets of Watts.
Yep.
And to make it to where I'm at today is a blessing from above.
Let me tell you something, man. You are absolutely right, and I'm glad you took it there. That's exactly where I was going. You know, and I don't know if I may have missed it, but your record in conference play, I think you – did you lose one game over the course of your time as the starting quarterback?
20-0-1.
So what was that?
20-0-1.
That's phenomenal. I think that may be in Big 8, Big 12, whatever – big you want, a pack you want, unprecedented. Higgs, the most, and I tell people this all the time because I had a front row seat. As your backup, I had the front row seat. And people would ask about it, and I say, man, a couple of things. One, Tuesday's practices, he was in the bathroom. with Saturday pregame, you wouldn't. I wish there was reality TV back then, bro. We would have been able to retire a long time ago. The pregames, this guy, the things that he would do, because we were roommates in the night before game. Saturday mornings were amazing. I mean, crazy. But when the game started, Haig would go from CJ, look, man, do you see how big they are out there? I'm not playing in this game, man. You better be ready to play. Through breaking records almost every week. I've never seen anyone. I always said, listen, the two most phenomenal players I've seen in college that I've had a chance to see up and close personal with the football in their hand is Barry Sanders and Darian Hagan. I mean, the stuff you did as an option quarterback, but not just an option quarterback, because I'm not going to put you in that box, just as a quarterback, I have never seen before, and I don't think we've seen it since.
I can tell you this, man. Every time we had the opportunity to play, and you know, it was an honor to play with you. It was an honor to be your roommate, but I was genuinely nervous as heck all the time. I have no idea why. You know, we were prepared. You know, we knew what to do. We knew how to do it. And all we had to do was get the ball in our hands, and we go out and we execute. But I don't know why I always had this. I think it was because I always had a fear of not playing up to the capabilities or the standard that was imposed on us or expected of us from Coach Barnett.
Yeah. You know, Hagan, it was for me, again, I had such a front row seat, and I knew exactly what was going to happen every game, right? You were going to, right before kickoff, you're going to have some issues with your stomach, right? And then you would tell Coach Barnett, you would snap at Coach Barnett because just this nervous energy. And I knew that was a good thing. It's like, if Eva Hagan comes out of here, comes out the locker room, cool, calm, and collected, we're in trouble. Right. And so you were this ball of nervous energy, and to the point where, and I don't know that Coach Barnett ever figured it out, but I did, because he would always come to me and say, CJ, get Hagan under control. I'm like, Coach, don't worry. Hayes will be fine, man. Just let's get the first play behind us, and everything will be fine. But it was such a unique, you know, run for us, an opportunity for us on so many fronts. But I can tell you right now, I had the pleasure of being in the front row to watch, again, the greatest option quarterback in the history of college football, one of the greatest quarterbacks in the history of college football do his thing. And I don't mean that because you're here, because you're my boy. Listen, we got receipts, right, as they say these days. Oh, yeah. Every time I look at a tape, I'm like, yep, that's the reason why right there.
Right, we got receipts, you're right.
We got receipts.
And hey, go ahead. Like you said, you didn't want to put me in a bubble and just, you know, be an option quarterback alone. I remember going to Coach Barnett and going to Coach McCartney my senior year after you quit on me. And I go to Coach Barnett.
I got a story there too, but go ahead. You tell yours first.
I said, Coach Barnett, look, I said, the NFL don't run the option. So I'm pretty sure I'm not going to get an opportunity to be a quarterback in the NFL. So I want to return punts. And he looked at me like I was crazy. And then he went and presented it to Coach McCartney. And Coach McCartney was all on board. And reason why he was all on board is because we had a freshman, Cordell Stewart, that they thought could come in and play as a freshman, and then they could move me to tailback and give me the experience that I wanted, an opportunity to showcase that I could do more than be an option quarterback. And so they thrust Cordell into action, and Cordell showed his true colors, okay, when he could not understand defenses. I'm telling you, it was so bad. It was so bad. So Coach Barnett was like, Hags, I'm sorry, man. We can't put you at tailback, but we'll put you at, you know, returning punts, and you'll do fine there. And for the first, I want to say, 7-8 games of the season, I led the country in punt returns.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. You know, it's funny because that was, again, just to give those who've been around a little perspective, it was the year after we won the national championship, Bienemy goes on to the National Football League. And here was the story, right? I decided I'm not going to play that next year. And, so Coach Barnett and Coach McCartney, when they got wind of that, they said, CJ, what are you doing? Like, you know, Hagues can – Bienemy's gone. Hagues, you may have already talked to him about playing tailback. You'll be the quarterback, and, you know, we need you. And I looked at Coach Barnett and I said, Coach, listen, it would be professional malpractice for you to take the ball out of that guy's hand. I'm not buying it. And if I were to coach this team, ain't no way in the hell I'd do it. So, no. Whatever your plan is, if it is to take the ball out of number three's hands on every snap, then it's a bad plan, and I ain't buying it. That's true story.
Really?
That's true story. That's the reason I said, you know, I thought about it for like 30 seconds, and I said, that makes no damn sense. Who takes the ball out of a Heisman Trophy candidate's hands, who happens to be your quarterback and your leader? It would make no sense. Right. It would make no sense. Right. And I was sick of practicing every Tuesday because you weren't practicing on Tuesday.
I learned that from Wally.
Hey, but on that note right there, I want to I'm going to name some Colorado quarterbacks. Okay. And I want you to sort of give your brief analysis of them and not even rank them. Just give your brief analysis of them. We'll start with Mark Walters. And that's a name that most people on the show won't even recognize. I think the history of Colorado football in the quarterback position is completely different if Wally doesn't blow his knee out in 1986. I don't think I'm a buff because I know the reason I was recruited, he blew his knee out in spring ball. But Mark Walters,
I think, was a really, really good quarterback. I watched Mark in high school because we're from the same area. I watched him in high school, watched him dominate. I thought he threw the prettiest football I've ever seen a human throw. And like you said, if he didn't blow out his knee, the guy would have been a superstar. And yeah. he was a guy that's tall enough, who was savvy enough, who was smart enough that if he didn't get hurt, he would have led Colorado to great heights, and he probably would have had a great shot at playing in the NFL.
That's exactly right. He's probably the one out of our crew who was more NFL ready in terms of skill set. And of course, Sal and Essie, because Mark and Sal were in the same class, that 86 class.
Right.
I mentioned Sal, and I know there's been a lot written said about our leader, you know, the warrior, Sal and Essie. What comes to mind?
Well, Sal, what comes to mind with him is he was a guy that was a confidence builder. He was a natural leader. He was a guy that people wanted to follow. And he went out and he played. He was a warrior. He played his butt off every time he went out there. And Sal, in my mind, not only is he big brother to me, but I think that Sal was a really savvy player. And I think he was the best out of all of us.
Yeah. You know, and was probably the cornerstone. He was such a warrior.
Right.
The turnaround in CU football, making that transition from building to, okay, we've arrived and we're going to be respected. Sal was probably, I would say Sal and Bienemy, probably the two figures that most exemplified that.
Yes, I would definitely agree. You know, because you had one that was a warrior that didn't have to raise his voice. He wasn't seeking attention. All he wanted to do was just lead his fellas. And then you had Eric. You know, Eric was a fiery competitor, and all he wanted to do was win and win at all costs. And sometimes, you know, he would, you know, especially as a freshman, sometimes he'd rub you the wrong way. And he would, you didn't want to be around him. You didn't want to play with him. But at the end of the day, shit, you want to go to war with that guy.
So, yeah, sometimes might have been the nicest, most diplomatic word you've ever used to describe him. All right, let's keep it moving here. Cordell, and by the way, that there was nothing like our quarterback room. Me, you, Mark, and Sal. That was the funnest time I had at CU in that quarterback room. Great, great competitors, great talent, and the cohesiveness there. I mean, we all bucked for each other.
Right. Yeah, we all respected one another. There wasn't no backstabbing, no talking about each other. We all wanted to make sure that we was all rolling in the same direction, and everybody had an opportunity to eat, like the kids say. You know,
that's exactly right. Cordell Stewart.
What comes to mind with Cordell Stewart? Great athlete, good competitor, super fast, athletic as heck. He was a guy that I think that you know, went on to play, you know, great heights in the NFL and things like that. I think in college when he played with us or with me, that if he would have put in the time more and invested more, and, you know, I think that Cordell would have really, really had more of an outstanding college career. But that didn't hurt him because, like I said, he's super athletic. He was a player that could, you know, play receiver, you know, because he could run, you know, and quarterback. That's why he got the nickname Slash. But if you look at him now from then, you know, now he's probably, you know, put on about 50 pounds that he don't need. So he was a really good quarterback. He was a really good quarterback. But he was a quarterback when he didn't have to take the shots like we took. We would take shots on every snap, every play. And all he did was when he was here, he dropped back and just slung that something.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Coy Detmer.
Coy Detmer, I thought, was a really good player. You know, he was smart. He was savvy. Come from a, you know, great lineage family. And, you know, his brother, Ty, won the Heisman Trophy. I thought that he could have had a really great career if he wouldn't have blown out his knee.
Joe Klatt. Aforementioned Joe Klatt.
Joe Klatt was a, you know, walk-on player and to get here and become a captain, and it's, but you know, your captains are voted by your teammates. He's come a long way. Joe was a guy that I coached with him, you know, when his senior year, you know, and I don't know where to rank Joe because he couldn't run. He wasn't an athletic guy, but he was super smart.
Right.
And he knew the West Coast offense like no other, and he was competitive, and he made all the right decisions, all the right checks, and things like that. But I don't think he's in the conversation of the top quarterbacks that ever played at the University of Colorado.
Now let me bring this. Pardon me.
I said that's just my opinion.
No, I hear you. And that's what I asked. That's one of the reasons why I wanted you on the show. I know we're going to get it straight. No chaser from my boy D. Hayes.
Right.
And you've earned the right, you know, given your resume to say exactly what you're saying and tell us how you feel. But this brings us to the current day. And, you know, we have such a small sample size, but I think an extremely impressive small sample size of Shedeur Sanders, right? I didn't know exactly what to expect. I watched many of his games when he played at Jackson State. But I got to tell you, there is something that about this kid, beyond his just physical talent, that I'm becoming, you know, really aware of. He has an instinct to step up and make the play when the play is most needed or when the team most needs the play. Again, you're closer to it than I am. Just give us an analysis of your opinion as you watch this young man unfold of Shedeur Sanders.
Well, I was around it a lot in the spring, and just to watch him understand the offense, the RPO system, you know, to watch how he got the ball out of his hands, to watch how he is a natural leader, and you know, just to see the development just in the spring, and he was learning a new offense. It was impressive, and then now to be, you know, looking at it from the stands or in the luxury box or whatever, and to see him, how competitive he is, to see how savvy he is. He's a guy that at any given moment you cannot doubt, because once you put doubt in your mind, or and he's gonna shock you.
Yeah,
he's gonna do something phenomenal that is gonna you're gonna say to yourself, damn, why do we blitz him? Or damn, why are we sitting back in cover two? You know, because he's gonna pick you apart if you don't bring the heat. And if you bring the heat, you know, he'll beat you sometime with his feet. Now, he's not the fastest like his dad was, but he is just he's an all-around, super athletic, smart, tough quarterback.
No, I'm looking forward to seeing. Hopefully we get him back next year, and I'm looking forward to see more of Shedeur Sanders. We've been talking a lot about quarterbacks, but I'd be remiss not to ask you about I think when it's all said and done, one of the greatest athletes to ever play for the University of Colorado. Kind of reminds me in a way of a Michael Westbrook or some of the great athletes that we played with, but even probably more skilled than those guys. And Travis Hunter, I've never quite seen 129, 130 play. I've never seen anything quite like that, Hagan. And again, you got a front row seat. What are we witnessing here?
I think you're witnessing a guy that got creative to be a football player. The dude is, he's super smart. He's super tough on defense. He has great hips, great feet. He has he changed direction. You know, he's a top-notch competitor. And reason why I say this is this: as a DB, okay, he knows what offenses are trying to do to him, and he shuts down receivers. And as a receiver, he knows what defense is trying to do to him, and he's unstoppable. So, you know, for a guy like him, has he been missing in the two games that we lost? Yes. Now, I'm not saying that we would have beat Oregon if he was playing. But I'm pretty sure we probably would have beat USC if he was playing. So he's been missed. But at the same time, I think that they are doing a really good job with him and not forcing him back out there when he's not fully healed. Because when he's fully healed, he's going to really be, you know, he's already hungry. He's going to really be that more dynamic and that more, I call him superheroish. Because the dude, you know, like you said, 130 snaps, you know, that's unheard of for anybody to do. You know, when we played here, we was our sixth or seventh game of the season, we were happy to get 100 plays in because now we knew we got a Letterman jacket.
Okay, that's right.
This guy here, first game, he lettered at the University of Colorado.
That's right.
That's unheard of. That's unheard of.
It's unheard of, unprecedented, and again, I'm enjoying watching it and seeing how, with great anticipation, how it will unfold over time. I know we're talking about, again, one of the greatest we've seen put on a Buffs uniform. And what I love a lot about the kid, I've had a chance to be around him a little bit. He is such a pleasant, shy young man. Just an affable. I love the fact that he's a kid who's a kid.
Right. He's one of those superstars that you love being around. Because, like you said, he loves being a kid, but at the same time, you know, he's not, you know, tooting his own horn. You know, he's a guy that he loves his girlfriend, loves being around her, loves his truck, and he loves going out and going to, anytime he gets an opportunity to go fish. So right now, with him being hurt, I'm pretty sure he's staying at the lake.
That's exactly right. Hey, man, before we let you get out of here, we got Stanford this week, a bye, then UCLA on the road. That rounds out the month of October. Your thoughts of what you would forecast for CU this week and as we look forward to that road trip after a bye week, I should mention, against UCLA.
Well, I think everyone is penciled in a W for CU. Because Stanford has struggled mightily in I think the last 3 years. You got a new coach and everything like that, but I don't think that they could quite hang with CU. I think CU would beat them. They should beat them handily. But at the same time, if we said the same thing about Arizona State, I think if they don't go into this with a big head and they go into it with the expectation, yeah, we expect to win, but we got to play our best, and we want to play our best. We haven't played our full game yet on offense. We have been, you know, hit or miss on special teams, you know, and the defense has given up a lot of points. So I think that, you know, if they go in there with I'm going to respect my opponent, but they're not going to beat us because I'm going to give them my best every play. I think we'll walk away from this, you know, game handily. And then we should win by. You didn't guess that.
Hey, clever.
But I think that going into UCLA, that UCLA is a good program. They've done a good job under Chip Kelly. But I think that with the fan base that's going to be there. It's going to be like a USC-UCLA game because we're coming. People coming from all over the country.
Yeah.
CU is going to have a backing that in the Rose Bowl that we've never had before. So, you know, going into that game, I think that the same blueprint, you know, respect your opponent, but expect victory and go in and execute the game plans that Coach Lewis and Coach Kelly has implemented. And I think that we'll walk out of those next two games 2-0.
Man, that would be sweet. I like you. I expect, see you to take care of business Friday night at home against a struggling Stanford team. But again, to your point, having said that, you know, we are who we are as well. And Coach Prime would be the first to say, if you're going to get me, you better get me now.
Right.
And I think the last 4 weeks have sort of I don't want to say exposed us, but we are that, right? We're a team that's capable of going on an incredible run, and because of some of the deficits that we have, particularly up front, right, on both sides, we're a team that can struggle as well. So right, I'm betting on the team that can go on a great run, Haig, over right, these next two games, and then we'll figure out what happens in November and November.
Right, absolutely.
Hey, man, yeah, listen, as always, it's a blast. And again, it's the GOAT, y'all, the greatest quarterback to ever play at the University of Colorado, Darian Haig. Thanks for taking the time. This is Black and Gold Weekly presented by BetSafe Colorado. And to my main man, D. Haig, my man. Be safe, everybody.